Hi, welcome to Hellbent. My name is Devin Handy.
And I'm Sarah Lerner.
And this is our first episode. So, so I think we're going to introduce ourselves. I'm Devin. I am 29, a stay-at-home mom. And I graduated from UC Davis with a degree in women and gender studies. So,
and I'm Sarah. I'm also 29, so really, really hitting that millennial, you know, demo right there. Aged on the high end, though.
On the high end, because we're old.
Went to Berkeley, lived on the East Coast for 5 years, shuttled back and forth between D.C. and New York, and I'm in L.A. Both Devin and I are in L.A.,
right.
And the hilarious thing about living in L.A. is that you can do a podcast with a friend, but still have to do it over Skype because you just live too far away.
Man, it's like we might as well live in different states.
Yeah, this is like a long distance podcast.
Even though we're in the same city. Yeah.
And if you're not from LA, it might sound ridiculous, but if you're from LA, it makes total sense. And so Devin and I met when we were five,
yeah, kindergarten.
Devin was like the first real friend that I ever made.
And I
have a very vivid memory of coming up to her in the playground and asking her if she wanted some of my carrots.
I forgot about that.
Most kids were like, ew, gross, like, you know, you just want to eat like Doritos or something. And Devin was like, yeah, carrots sound pretty dope. And that's kind of how our friendship started.
It's true. And I remember we took swimming lessons at the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah.
For years.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then I moved away. That was up in San Francisco. And then I moved to Los Angeles when I was 10. And we kind of lost touch a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we reconnected.
Totally gutted, though, when you left.
Totally. We connected a little bit in college, mm-hmm. which was fun. But then we lost touch again, of course. And then you moved to Los Angeles not too long ago.
Yeah, so we kind of kept in touch in the way that a lot of people, I think, our age keep in touch, which is like liking each other's Facebook statuses and like sometimes like sending pithy comments, you know, and you're like, yeah, like I don't really talk to this person regularly in real life, but I'm like, I'm down with this person, like, right. You know, and it's pretty cool when you're friends with someone when you're really young, and then when you get older, you discover that you totally want to be their friend as an adult.
Right? It's
which
so
was awesome.
Great. Like, wow, I would totally eat your carrots again.
Yeah. I don't have any carrots now, but if I did, I would give you some. But yeah, Devin and I, when I moved back to California, but specifically to LA, we reconnected and we kind of drummed up the idea of the podcast after the election.
Yeah.
We definitely reconnected throughout the election, and right afterward, we definitely had to have like a processing session, as I'm sure most of you had to.
We literally went to like the shishiest lunch place we could find.
Right.
And, you know, just talked about how devastating, you know, this loss was.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's important to call it a loss and not a failure.
Yes. Agreed.
Because, you know, so many people are like, oh, Hillary failed or whatever. And she didn't. We lost an election.
Yeah.
And that happens.
And we will definitely get into that.
Oh, totally. Sorry.
No,
I'm jumping ahead.
I think it's a good setup.
Yeah.
We will delve deeper into that because I think that is a really important distinction. And that's part of why we're here, mm-hmm. why we have this podcast called Hellbent. Mm-hmm. And we named it Hellbent. This is sort of my interpretation, but I'll let Devin give hers. Well, first, we were slightly tipsy over brunch,
yes,
and we were like, what? If we had a podcast name, what would it be? And the first thing that we thought was like Coke-induced Twitter rage.
Which is still my favorite, by the way.
Yeah, we almost named it that, just because that's basically our president. He's up at like 4 in the morning, like coked out, like ready to like start a war with like China and shit. And we're like, that would be an amazing podcast name, but probably not the most evergreen.
Right, right.
So we wanted to make one that lasted a while. But so we kind of went from there to Hellbent because, A, it feels kind of like we're
in hell,
diverging right to hell.
Directly to hell.
Directly to hell. But B, also, you know, this resurgence of activism and engagement, you know, people are really hellbent to resist Trump and to make positive change. And I think that that's kind of what we are going to be talking about. I mean, I think the first episode we want to kind of do a backgrounder and talk about what the election was like for us as women, but that's kind of what our name means to me. What about you, Devin?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought of it as like we're hell-bent on change.
Right.
And, you know, if I had to say one positive thing that came out of Trump's election, it would be that I personally got involved.
Yes.
If Hillary had won, I would have been like, yeah, I'm going to get involved and woo. But
right
now I'm like, fuck this shit.
Oh, it is fuck this shit o'clock every damn hour of every damn day.
Exactly. Well, and when I went to the Women's March, my sign simply said, fuck this fucking shit, because that's all I had to say.
Oh man, I loved all the old ladies at the march who were like, I can't believe I'm still protesting this shit.
Yeah, but right.
Here we are.
Right.
But yeah. I think that there's a new generation of activism. Democracy is in the streets, and we're really, I think a lot of us realize, especially, I mean, Devin and I don't know if you can tell, but I'll just clarify, we're both white women.
Yes.
We are both white women, and we both consider ourselves intersectional feminists, but we both realize that we can be very problematic and limited and narrow. And, you know, I think that's something I realized, especially in the aftermath of this election, is I've been kind of, you know, I've been paying attention to all the atrocities that have been happening, but I haven't been being active enough. I haven't been active enough. And I think that a lot of women of color and other members of marginalized groups were like, hey, where the fuck have you guys been? And it's like, fair. That is a completely fair point. But we're here. And I have like 6 congressional numbers in my favorite section on my phone. Like, I'm calling Kamala every damn day.
Oh, Kamala.
But mostly DiFi. Mostly fine.
DiFi like, and I are going to be besties.
Yeah.
Just because I'm going to call her all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as I like to say, Donald Trump sort of put avocado on racism. So all of a sudden, white women were like, woo, racism. Because, you know, now we're interested.
Wake up to this shit. Like, really wake up to this shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree. I'm a white woman. I am well off. I'm definitely in the upper middle class. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I have a lot of privilege, visible and invisible privilege. And even just examining that privilege is a good first step. But yeah, like you said, Sarah, we can still be problematic, and we still need to listen. You know, sometimes you just shut your mouth and listen.
Yeah. I never understand when you see white women like really go studs up on white feminism. It's like, you would hate if a man was like acting defensively.
Right.
Like, you just have to put yourself in those shoes, I think, as a white woman. Like,
that's a really good point.
How would I feel if someone was like, I can't stand, like, sometimes in my Twitter feed, I get, like, I'll say something like, you know, if every group voted the way black women did, Trump would not be elected. And it's because literally 94% of black women voted for Hillary.
Right.
And I get so many white women in my mentions like, not this white woman. I'm like, are you seriously not all menning my mentions right now? You would hate if a man did that. You would hate it.
Not all men. Oh,
yeah. Man. So anyway, this is where we are. Mm-hmm. But we definitely want to kind of go backwards and talk about the election and what that was like for us. So, I mean, Devin, first of all, sort of going through, I guess, the primaries and the general, like, what kind of sexism and misogyny did you personally experience or observe and witness?
Well, I think with politics in general, it's women don't really get taken seriously as mm-hmm. a standard. You know, it's just sort of like, oh, what are you talking about? You know, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's the refrain that they use. You know, for me during the primaries, I think the best example of sexism was I read, and I can't remember where I read it, but it was basically like, if Bernie Sanders were Bernadette Sanders,
yes,
a crazy old Jewish woman with unkempt hair and socialist leanings, she wouldn't have, I mean, she would have been laughed out of the room, you know,
100%.
But somehow it's okay for Bernie Sanders to mm-hmm. do this and, you know, be a viable Democratic nominee candidate. And that to me just makes no sense.
And to be clear, in, you know, 30, 40 years, I will be that crazy, disheveled Jewish woman.
Right.
I won't be running for president, and I won't be able to do that. Well, maybe one day in the future, a woman, a Bernadette Sanders, right. could, like, have an untucked shirt and, like, hair all over the place and just be, like, screaming and, like, yelling about the establishment.
Right.
I mean, I hope that we can get to that future where a woman can do that. But I agree. Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that was really the sort of beginning. And then once Hillary got the nomination, everyone was like, oh, this can't possibly be legitimate. Like, let's question this, because I could never see a woman president. So how could our party nominate this person? Like, there's got to be a scandal.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think what I really realized in the primaries, and I wrote about this a little bit, which I'll get into, I really realized that so-called progressive men can be just as sexist and misogynistic as their conservative counterparts. And in a lot of ways, the quote-unquote progressive men who do exhibit those patterns of behavior, they can be worse, my opinion, because
it's insidious.
It's insidious, so sometimes it's harder to articulate,
mm-hmm.
but also they get incredibly defensive. Like, it's almost like a part of their, like, personal brand. So if you're like, hey, this thing that you did, you kind of mansplained, like, my vote to me, they get super defensive and really problematic. And so they're almost, to me, progressive men can be worse because they don't think that they hate women or that they don't respect women. Whereas, you know, I'm not, like, down with Trumpers who are, like, talking about, like, grabbing my pussy.
Right.
But
at least they're honest about it.
They're being honest. I know who they are, and I believe them.
Right. If you're going to be a shitty
men don't know who they are, and they don't believe me.
Yeah. If you're going to be a shitty person, you might as well own it. You know,
right. Is that the title of our first podcast?
I think it might be.
If you're gonna be
a shitty person, own it.
Just own it. So I wrote an article during the primaries around the time that it was pretty clear that Hillary was going to clinch the nomination. And I called it Men I Otherwise Like and Respect. And I kind of just went through all, like, the things I had heard as a female Hillary voter, that I was, you know, what progressive men had told me, that I was, like, voting with my vagina, that I was that I was being selfish, that she wasn't qualified, that she was a Democratic whore, like, all these, like, things that added up. And my conclusion was, men I otherwise like and respect are no longer men I either like or respect.
Right.
Because the men I once liked and respected never actually liked and respected me. And I think that was, like, a big realization.
Yeah. And it kind of also plays in to the exceptional woman.
Yes.
You know? And so, like when they would say, oh, she's not qualified, like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, like, you can say a lot of things about Hillary, but you, like, objectively speaking, that is, like, the dumbest fucking thing you could ever say.
Right? Like, if you're gonna insult someone, like, at least do it right. You know, yeah. You
be better at being insidious.
Exactly.
Like, that's just really bad.
That's just stupid. I mean,
poorly executed.
Yeah, poorly executed. You know, one of my favorite sort of criticisms of Hillary is that she's secretly a Republican. Now, I could, you know. You know,
man, that is a long con.
That's a long con, man.
I mean, to be fair, I know when she was younger, she like helped Goldwater's campaign or something.
Yeah,
but, you know, we all make youthful mistakes.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. That's true. I wore leopard print in lethal doses when I was younger.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
we all do
totally.
Bad things. Well, I just think saying things like she's not qualified. It's just on its face, like, is she not qualified because she doesn't have years of experience and is smarter than all of you combined? Or is it because she has a vagina?
Right.
And obviously we know the answer here, but it's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And yeah. I think going back to what you were saying about the exceptional woman,
yeah.
And just to be clear, not all women have vaginas, you know, there are trans
right.
women and stuff, but yes, that was the insult hurled at her
specifically. Yeah.
But going back to the exceptional woman
mm-hmm.
comment you made, so feminist writer Sadie Doyle wrote a great article a couple months ago last month about Ivanka Trump and sort of like basically her fake ass feminism.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but she talked about how Ivanka Trump is an example of the exceptional woman. So she's someone that men prop up and say, see, this, there's a woman that can be successful and like career oriented ish. And like,
ish.
See, you have to just be like her.
Right.
But she's still that doesn't take into account all the privileges she has as a
right.
white woman, as someone who, you know, was born into wealth and all this stuff. But also it doesn't recognize the fact that this quote unquote exceptional woman plays into this patriarchal notion anyway, that, you know, women just have to be the quote unquote right kind of woman to like survive and outwit sexism.
Right.
So it's a very convenient scapegoat for women for men to use and say, see, if you were just more like Ivanka, then
right.
like she can do it. So like all the harassment and sexism and shit that you experience, that's not, like, you just have to overcome that. So it's like a very convenient scapegoat.
It is. And, you know, to that point, and, you know, I definitely think you summed up the exceptional woman beautifully. You know, if you're smart enough, hot enough, wealthy
mm-hmm.
enough, everything enough, then you too can be this perfect machine that...
Beacon
that overcomes patriarchy, which I would argue that even Ivanka doesn't overcome patriarchy.
Oh no.
No. I mean, that's the point. She plays within the rules, and that's why
right.
it's allowed.
Right.
And kind of going back to that point though, her fake ass feminism. You know, I think feminism is, this is a little trite, but you know, like the F word. And it's always funny because when I see like, let's talk about the F word, and I know they're gonna talk about feminism, but I'm always like, why are we talking about the word fuck? Like, I love the word. Like, do we need to discuss it?
I'm using the word fuck a lot.
Yeah.
November 8th.
Oh yeah. I mean, yes.
Like every hour.
Every hour.
And I get a lot of like dude friends who are like, wow, you like swear a lot on your Twitter feed. I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. These are not subtle times. Like,
well, yeah. Well, that's another sort
that's
of
another
sexist.
Thing.
Well, no, it's a sort of sexist thing. Like, you know, women are supposed to be polite. They're not supposed to swear or fart or,
right.
you know, do all, any of these things that
make
know,
us human.
Right. Make us
it's
human.
Three-dimensional.
Right. And, you know, talking about feminism, people are like, that's a stupid word. Why isn't it equalism or whatever? It's like, you've missed the point completely. Like
mm-hmm.
the point is 6 miles to the left of you. Like
right.
you've got nothing. And when people like Ivanka Trump or, and I don't necessarily need to get into this, but like Taylor Swift,
mm-hmm.
like that brand of feminism, which is becoming increasingly popular, among wealthy, white, you know, exceptional women sort of category, I think it's really toxic. Because not only does it dilute kind of what feminism means overall, but it also, you know, these are role models. You know, I know plenty of teenage girls who look up to Taylor Swift. And I know plenty of teenage girls who look up to Ivanka Trump. I mean, she used to get profiled in the teen magazines all the time, you know, as like this successful woman. And, you know, so for them to put out this brand of feminism that is really playing into the patriarchy and playing into things we're trying to resist. It creates a muddled definition, especially for, you know, younger girls, younger women.
Yeah, definitely. And I think bringing it back to Hillary during the campaign, I think I heard a lot of men during the primary, especially being like, oh, but I would vote for a woman if it were Elizabeth Warren. Like, that was like their jail, get out of jail free card. And I was like, that's like the same thing as saying I have a black friend, therefore I can't be racist. Like, and but they did the same thing with Elizabeth Warren, which is, see, here's this exceptional woman who fits within what my confines of progressivism is. Like, I always found it very revealing when liberal men were like, well, Hillary's not progressive enough for me.
Well, that's the secret Republican thing.
Right. She's a secret Republican. But, I mean, listen, for anyone, there's going to be certain issues that you prioritize, and that's fine. But I always found it very revealing that the work that she's done for women and children, especially the CHIP program that provided basically insurance to, health insurance to kids, to poor kids, that wasn't progressive enough. For men, I always found that to be very revealing. But yeah, they, you know, a lot of the sort of quote unquote Bernie bros, or I like to call them progressives or brochulists.
That's my new favorite
word. It's very dynamic. The word bro, you can really repurpose across different words. But they, I always knew that their quote unquote like support of Elizabeth Warren and like the way they propped her up onto a pedestal. Like, it wasn't ever like, oh, I like Elizabeth Warren, she's awesome. It was always like, she's amazing and she's the best and therefore I can't be sexist. And you're like, I see you.
And well, I also think it's like when you have a crush on someone and they're like the smartest, most beautiful, perfect person. And then you get to know them and you realize that they leave Diet Coke cans all over your apartment. And you're like, fuck, man. Let's go back to the crush phase. Because once we pull Elizabeth Warren through the nomination or political machine or whatever you want to call it, she'll be covered in shit too. You know, everyone's got a past and hers will come out. But right now, she's our political crush. Like, she's perfect and beautiful and progressive, but not too progressive. And, you know.
I think she was a convenient foil for Hillary.
Exactly.
But now that she's, like, and, but you saw it when she didn't endorse anyone during the primary. You saw it after Bernie lost Massachusetts. All these brochulists or progressives or however you want to call them were flooding her Facebook and Twitter feeds and, like, saying all sorts of vile shit. And then when she ended up endorsing Hillary after she got the nomination, same thing. And I was like, I fucking knew it. I knew your, like, admiration of Elizabeth Warren was predicated on patriarchal notions. Like, you just wanted an avenue to hate Hillary.
Yeah, and, you know, again, liking someone within that limited scope is sort of part of the hidden misogyny that exists in our political life. And this is kind of a good transition into another article. Perfect is the enemy of good if you're a female presidential candidate.
who wrote that, Devin?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know. This really cool lady.
It was me.
It was her. Sorry. Yeah, we made that clear. But this one, I love this article. and not just because my friend wrote it. But it really does sort of spell out the sort of hidden misogyny, you know, that if you're not perfect, then you can't be good enough. If you're not perfect, you can't, no flaws are allowed. And then a flaw is another sort of
loaded buzzword.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just to sum up that article, which I wrote, thanks for the plug, Devin.
Yeah, of course.
It's called Perfect is the Enemy of the Good if you're a female presidential candidate. And I wrote it a few weeks after the election, or maybe a couple months. I don't know. But time is just a weird, like, I feel like the first 10 days of Trump's presidency have been 10 years. So I don't have a good conception
of time. It's 1 o'clock, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's fuck this shit o'clock all the time. but anyway, so this article that I wrote, I basically wrote something about that loaded word flawed. It was something that I noticed, that a word that followed her around everywhere, that followed Hillary Clinton, even in newspaper endorsements of her. It was always like, she's flawed, but, or like, oh, they would do the both sides of it. Oh, they're both flawed, as if like her and Trump are the fucking same. Like,
it's so balanced.
I know. That's a whole other topic that I really go down. But anyway, I talked about that word flawed and how it, you know, we never use it for men because their three-dimensionality and imperfections are just sort of accepted, especially for white men, right?
Sure.
Like, if you're not white, then maybe not.
Right,
but
right.
Men, we just sort of accept by default that they are three-dimensional and imperfect. Whereas women, flawed when it was attached to Clinton, it didn't take on this connotation of we all make mistakes, we're all imperfect, and that's okay.
Right.
Instead, it was sort of this insidious reminder of the perfection that the world does expect from women and like the impossible double standards that we're constantly up against. And I think that's really key because Hillary Clinton was probably the most qualified and heavily credentialed candidate to ever run for president, maybe George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
But I would put Hillary over the top myself. But because she had, and it's no mistake that the first female presidential nominee of a major party had to come to the table as the most qualified.
Right.
Going back to what Devin said earlier, she couldn't come as like a Bernie Sanders ready to like quote unquote shake up the system. And although don't even get me started on that, because he spent 25 years or however long in public life, he's not a fucking outsider.
Right.
Don't even get me started. But anyway, and so because of that, she had accrued all these, you know, policy decisions and quote unquote mistakes. And so it was like baggage,
right?
But it's this double-edged sword. She wouldn't have been able to come to the table without all that experience. And then it was used against her, and she's flawed.
Well, I love during the campaign how her experience was framed as a negative.
Right.
Like,
what? Yeah. Well, so weird when the woman is super experienced. It's all of a sudden like we want change.
Yeah,
we want to get rid of the quote-unquote establishment.
Yeah, like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Well, okay, so this idea of flaws, sort of something unique that I can bring to this discussion is as a mother, the idea of flawed as a mother is complicated. You're basically, everyone has an opinion on everything. And, you know, if you don't do everything quote unquote perfectly, then you're going to screw up your kid for the rest of their life.
Right.
And so there's this constant pressure from other people, from yourself, from parenting books, and, you know, everyone has an opinion. So, like, if you are a helicopter parent, you're ruining your kid. But if you're a free-range parent, you let your kid walk around, like, you're a bad parent. And if you are a working mom, you're ignoring your kids. And if you're a stay-at-home mom, then you're smothering your kids and you have given up your identity.
Right.
And there is absolutely no winning in that game. The only way to win is to not play.
That's a really good point, which is essentially what patriarchal systems want women to do. They want them to be silent and not make noise. And I think you make a good point. There's very black and white.
right.
There's not a lot of room for complexity when you're a woman.
Right. Right. You either are good at what you're doing or you're bad at it. And that definition will change based on who you're talking to.
Yeah. And Rebecca Traister, who's one of my favorite writers, she writes for New York Magazine, wrote an article last year about, you know, kind of that along those lines. Why do we love Joe Biden? Like, why is he Uncle Joe?
Right.
When he has a similar record to Hillary, if not, there are key things that are more to the right.
Yeah.
And we hate Hillary.
Right.
And it's like, I wonder what that could fucking be.
Wow.
Is it a gender thing?
Wait. Or? You're telling me that this isn't about policy decisions or experience and nothing like that? Are you sure?
I mean, the progressives did tell me they love Elizabeth Warren, so I don't think it's a gender thing.
Of course. Yeah. Well, and that is all sort of key.
Mm-hmm.
Is the, like you said, there's really no room for complexity if you're a woman. Like, if Hillary had made one of the gaffes that Uncle Joe made, she would be crucified.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Trump, all the shit. I mean, if she did a fraction of what Trump was doing, she'd be impeached like 7,000 years ago.
My God. Can you even imagine, like, Hillary Clinton say, like, yeah, I grab him by the dick?
I hope she goes out and says it now. Like, I just want her to say she's, like, gonna just punch every dude in the dick who said that her and Trump were the same.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I would love her so much more.
But we don't advocate violence.
No assaults, no harassment.
No assaults, thank you. No, it's really true. And, you know, being a woman in any male-dominated field, and let's be real, politics is a male-dominated field, comes with its own challenges. And again, what they want you to do is, like I said, the only way to win is not play. But that's how we end up with Donald Trump as a president.
Yeah, and I want to, like, get your thoughts on sort of what election night was like for you and what the aftermath has been. Because, you know, it definitely was, I think a lot of women felt pretty crushed. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of people, you know, sort of go along the Bernie would have won vein and, like, blaming the people who voted for Hillary. Like, we should have nominated someone else.
Right.
I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. It was a rough night, as I'm sure it was for many. You know, I started the day, I took my son to school. He goes to preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing an election of their own. They had three ballot initiatives that they had to decide on. like, a special treat. Do you want ice cream or apples? It was adorable. It was the world's cutest civics lesson. And I, you know, I dropped him off and we voted in his little election. And then I went and voted. And then I went to the market and bought really expensive champagne. Because I was like, we're going to be popping bottles tonight.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been shored up by Nate Silver and the Keepin' It 1600 guys and, you know, and then the results start to come in and I'm like, okay, well, we're starting over on the East. Like, it's pretty clear which states are going to be Hillary's and which aren't. Like, it's fine. And as the night went on, it wasn't even sadness at first. It wasn't even anger at first. It was just like
shock.
Like, and I know this might sound terrible, but I was like, why didn't I see this coming?
Yeah, I think a lot of people,
like,
felt that way.
I felt almost like I wanted this so badly. And it was so invalidating to see, because there was no way that Donald Trump should have been elected.
Yeah.
he basically defies all of our American values. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he's not even religious, you know. He's actually very openly a religious. And I found that interesting too, that no one brought that up.
Yeah. He seems to sort of conform to whatever right. he thinks is going to get the most like attention.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that makes perfect sense, but it just, I was so, so shocked. And then I was so, so sad that I literally left my living room and went out onto my patio and sobbed.
Yeah.
I just sobbed. Mm-hmm. And my husband was there, and one of our friends, another guy was there. And I think they were having a hard time understanding why I was so upset.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, it's going to be okay. Like, we're going to figure this out. And I was like, okay. You know what? I'm going to not take this on at this exact moment because right. I have my own emotional work to do. I can't do yours.
Right.
But, right. You know, I sobbed. And then I sobbed for like the next 3 days.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you? What were you doing?
Very similar. I woke up so fucking amped.
I was
like, we're going to bring on the fucking matriarchy. It's yep. going to be glorious. Mm-hmm. Like, this is her time. Like, I will defend this to the day. I think she ran a great campaign.
I think
hindsight is 2020. I think the internal polling that they had caused them to make tactical decisions that they probably wouldn't be making now mm-hmm. that they, you know. But, you know, also fucking a foreign power interfered with our election, and so did the FBI. So that is like another, like,
we can do a whole podcast on just that.
Yeah, I mean, I swear to God, if I hear another mediocre white guy make some comment about how Russia didn't prevent her from visiting Wisconsin, I will cut a bitch.
I will cut a bitch.
You know, I think, and that's the problem. I think there's a lot of whiteness and especially white maleness in media, mm-hmm. and a lot of narratives sort of crystallize around certain narrow viewpoints
yeah.
before in things that aren't even supported by data. But, you know, being the first female presidential nominee, like, you're running up against a patriarchal system that has shut women out of executive power for 240 years and counting.
Right.
And so not only did she have to go up against that, but there was all these other extreme hurdles with Russia and the FBI and all these things. It was a perfect shitstorm, mm-hmm. you know? So, and, you know, there are, you know, the Nate Silvers of the world who say that, you know, if not for Comey's letter, we would have a President Clinton.
I mean, that's how
weird our electoral college system right. is. The fact that she won by close to 3 million votes. I mean, I see it as a mathematical fluke. That's how I see this
right.
election.
Right.
Not at the time. At the time, I was kind of like you. I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I was numb. I sort of had a bad feeling actually at the polls.
Yeah, and it's so funny that you say that, because I also was like not feeling great.
Yeah.
And I just chalk that up to listening to 538 every day for yeah. 3.5 weeks. And I was like, that'll make anyone crazy.
Yeah.
But no, there was definitely some unease.
And it was super random. It was only because when I got to the polls to vote, I had to vote with a provisional ballot, because apparently when I had registered to vote, I don't know what happened, but I was signed up to vote by mail.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but because I didn't mail in my ballot, I had to fill out a quote unquote provisional ballot, which they said it still counts the same. They count it like a couple weeks later, because
right.
they just want to make sure that you're not double voting.
Right.
Which
right.
makes sense.
Right.
And, you know, again, we live in California,
yeah.
one of the bluest states, and a state that overwhelmingly went for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew my vote wasn't going to affect that. But
right.
for some reason, that just gave me, like, a bad feeling. But I kind of brushed it off. I was like, whatever, like, calm down. She's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was feeling very confident that she was going to win.
Yeah.
And early in the evening, all the states were, like, too close to call or mm-hmm. too early to call. And these were states that should have been, according to the polls, like pretty solidly hers. And some of them ended up going for her. Some of them ended up going for Trump. But when they called Florida for Trump, that's when I was like,
it's over.
And also they were calling the senator races often before the presidential one. So when the in the battleground states where the Republican senators were winning, I was like, oh shit. That's usually not a good, you know, if down ballot the Republicans are winning, you know, top of the ticket, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was, looking back, you know, I see the how it's a mathematical error or a mathematical fluke, rather.
Right.
And I really think it speaks to how outdated our system is. And I'm not going to sit here and debate the Electoral College because, you know, people have opinions about that. But I will say it's very obvious that it no longer serves the purpose it was meant to serve.
Yes.
It no longer makes sense for the society that we've structured.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is going to be an important discussion, maybe not for right now, because we're sort of like the house is on fire.
Right.
But, you know, there are, it's definitely part of something that I think it speaks to a larger issues in politics.
Yeah, it is definitely, it's not lost on me that system, the Electoral College, which is rooted in racism, which is rooted in, you know, slavery, elected the probably the most racist, white supremacist, Nazi, bigot, asshole possible.
Do you think that, like, history has a sense of humor? Like, if it was sentient?
It is definitely, like, there are definitely narratives.
Right.
It's definitely narratives. And I think that, yeah, like, I don't think having, like, the Electoral College discussion is worthwhile, but not to relitigate this election necessarily.
Right. Right.
But I think you do make a good point. The last 16 years, we've had two Democratic presidents who won the popular vote and were denied the presidency.
Right. So that kind of also shows, and I read something like out of 5 instances that this has happened where one person wins the popular but not the presidency, something like 3 or 4 of them have happened in the last 50 or 60 years. And I gotta find the source on that. But it's something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
So it just shows that this system, especially in recent history, just isn't keeping up with the way our society is structured.
Right. You know? I mean, our vote in California is very much watered down.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it proportionally, and, you know, I don't think that, you know, I understand people's hesitance with big states like us, like really like dominating and like overpowering everyone. So I don't want us to necessarily overpower. Right. I think we just clearly the system is flawed. There's that word again, flawed. And I'm not going to move to a state just to be in a swing state. Like I'm going to live in the place I want to live in. Absolutely. And my vote should count.
Yeah.
Proportional to, I mean, listen, California is the 5th or 6th largest economy in the world. It's like we send the most tax dollars, you know, to the federal government. So when you try to, I mean, it's funny when people say, oh, but if you discount California, I'm like, I mean, do you want us to discount you from all the subsidized, like, federal programs you get because of our tax dollars? Because we can do that.
Yeah.
To be fair, I'm not advocating for Cal exit. I think we need to stay in the union and fight.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway. Yeah. Anyway, it was tough. And I think there was a lot of blame game after the election, which really, really, honestly was more crushing than her loss.
Yeah.
You know, because listen, I'm not saying, no one's saying she ran a perfect campaign, but no one ever runs a perfect campaign.
Right.
I just found it very interesting that when the woman who won the popular vote overwhelmingly but lost the election, when we had a woman running and we had this terrible man win, which is just the ultimate metaphor for being a woman. Every woman recognizes, you know, being super qualified and then losing out to some dickwad, right? But we didn't ask how our country could elect this horrible man.
Right.
we wondered why the woman didn't run a pitch perfect campaign.
Right.
Faced against the craziest odds.
Right.
And then there was a lot of relitigating of the fucking Democratic primary. Okay. Like,
I
we
literally
never
can't.
Did that when two men were running against each other.
Yeah.
And there's, exactly. And it goes back to just delegitimizing her win.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We didn't do that when it was between Hillary and Barack Obama.
Nope.
When she lost the primary, no one was like, there is a scandal. Like,
and
no.
She won the popular vote in that primary.
Yeah, she did.
Which, but whatever, who fucking cares?
Right.
Like, we don't need to relitigate that. But it's interesting that we're like, oh, Bernie should have, or Bernie would have. Like, fuck
If I never hear Bernie in conjunction with the presidency ever again, I will be a happier person. But, yeah, well, so that's sort of been our overall take of what's happened and what's going on.
And we felt like that was important to sort of dive into as briefly as we could, because, you know, these are, it kind of sets up how we're feeling with this presidency and moving forward.
Right. And so the formats for our subsequent episodes is going to be more about current events and sort of analysis of what's going on and how kind of gender and public policy have this interplay that's often overlooked.
Right.
And sort of making gender and misogyny and more visible in our political life.
Yeah, I think Devin and I agree that we don't take sexism seriously enough, as Sadie Doyle puts it, as a political vector.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing, you know, I mean, a lot of people have been referencing the horseshoe theory of politics, which is basically that politics isn't a spectrum, like across a flat line, but it's more like a parabola or a horseshoe. And that the far left and the far right are actually closer together than you would think.
Yeah.
And you saw a lot of that in this election. You see, you know, Sean Hannity, like, embrace Julian Assange. Like, what world?
Are we
living in? And a lot of what brings those two very disparate groups with, on the surface, very different interests together is sexism.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's sort of going to be our overarching theme.
Yeah.
In, you know, with this podcast. And we're also going to have some fun and talk about fun things and, you know, cool books to read. And I think for me today, thinking about this, I was like, what I want to do with this podcast is encourage people to be curious and to be interested and to really think about what they believe and why they believe it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a big part of it too is, you know, sharing our stories, being more active and engaged. You know, we'll get into this in the next episode, but our experience at the Women's March and all these subsequent protests. And I went to Dianne Feinstein's office last week, and that was a really cool experience, going with a group of folks, people I'd never met, but like very concerned citizens, talking to her aides, just sort of our experiences being more active and engaged. And, you know, I think there's plenty of mediocre white dudes with podcasts. So why can't we have a couple of slightly above mediocre white women
with a podcast?
Just kidding. We're like way amazing.
We're way amazing. It's true. Okay. So I think with that, we will hopefully see you next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Signing off.
Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening. Bye.